It's business time, baby.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
My client,
Mama Monster,
conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Fat delete.
You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
This is the first sound off of 2018. This is episode 529 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, January 7th, 2018. I am the Sala Monster. Hope everybody had a happy new year. This is the time of year, of course, where everybody loves to make New Year's resolutions and everybody loves to say, New Year, New Me. Right. All I know is this is the time of year where the gym becomes very packed. Can't get on some of the machines that I want to use. It's a gigantic pain in the ass for all these New Year, New Me people who love to come to the gym and then 3 weeks later, they're nowhere to be found. So now I have to wait it out a few weeks until all the newbies disappear. All you people know who you are. No, seriously, hopefully everybody had a great New Year. This is the road to the Royal Rumble. So right now things are kind of dead right now, honestly. It'll start to pick up a little bit more as we get closer to the show. There's a lot of interesting things coming up at the end of the month. You've got the Raw 25th anniversary, the same week, really, as the Royal Rumble, and an NXT TakeOver show. So that's going to be a fun week. It's just getting to that point. This time of year can be a real slog, and hopefully things will pick up here in the next few weeks. The good news is we had a fantastic New Japan show this week. Every January 4th, you have Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome, and this year's show is no different in that it is already in the running for a show of the year. And if it does not end up being the best show of the year, then that means we're in for a pretty good year. And I will talk about Wrestle Kingdom here in a little bit, but first, let me just say thank you to everybody who is tuning in for the first sound off of what will be, what is, really, our 11th year. Now, we don't officially celebrate 11 years until November. We have a little ways to go until the next anniversary. We just had our 10-year anniversary show, but this is the beginning of our 11th year. That's a long time. There's very few podcasts, at least for wrestling, that have been around that long, only a handful. And the success of this show I owe to all of you, so thank you for that. And also thank you to Audible, who continues to be a great partner and a great sponsor here for this show. Audibletrial.com/Sala Monster is the link that you can use still here in the new year to get yourself a free audiobook. And there are plenty to choose from if you are looking for a good wrestling book. I sometimes get emails from people asking me, what do you recommend? What wrestling book do you recommend? I've heard a lot of good things about a lot of different books. But, you know, Daniel Bryan, Bob Holly, even the Justin Roberts book, you know, The Death of WCW. I mean, there's a lot of great books, and they're all on Audible. Many of them are on Audible, and you can get the audiobook version for free just using our link, audibletrial.com/Sala Monster. If you've already cashed in on your trial and use your link, spread that link around to other people. Maybe they might get some enjoyment out of that. And also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP and support the podcast, you can do so. TheSalaMonster.com is the place to go. You'll see the PayPal link on the right-hand side of the page. Just click that little button. And $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the show. We had a lot of first-time donators this week, which is really cool. Really nice way to start out the new year. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control, Cody Thompson. Was no Deadpool this week. I hope he's alive. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. The Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra. Raymond the Mountie Medina. Masgrave, Micah Harshaw. The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs. Killshot, Keith Hart. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. Ryan the Dagger, McTaggart. The Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velado. Steven Handyman Halistick. The Bakersfield Brawler, I actually just mentioned him twice. You can see, it's kind of early in the morning here. I haven't had my cup of coffee. You know why? Because I don't drink coffee. I don't know how I do it. But people say to me, like, yeah, you wake up in the morning, you barely sleep. Surely you must drink like 5 cups of coffee. I'm like, I don't drink coffee. I think coffee is gross. I don't like it. They're like, well, how do you function? I go, I don't know. I just do. Maybe it's gasoline. I don't know. Anyway, the DC Slayer Marcus Cross, Aim for the Head Andrew Jorlog, the Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T, Vicious Vincent Cooper, the Show-Off Corey Van Dam, Rochester Ruff Victor De Leon, John More Money More Problems Morin, Faith Hard Knocks Harvey, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, and all the best to Mama Eichard, Angelo Big Boy Bellata, Robert Law and Order Laurie, Poison Pill, Lindsay Manns, Garrett Greedo, Garrido. There's a mouthful, say that five times fast. And last but not least, the Tech Titan, Robert Uzzel. No matter what kind of PC problem you may have, big or small, Uzzel Technology Enterprises is here for you, located in Dallas. Number to call is 972-591-1636. So thank you to Robert and everybody else showing their support of the podcast this week. The Royal Rumble pool is still active in the Facebook group. Again, it's a private group on Facebook. Type in the full name of the show. You have to apply for membership if you are not already one of the 6,000 plus members we have in that group. You'll find the post sticky to the top. All you have to do is like the post. It is a post from Zach Hulker. He's the one running it for the fifth year running here. Just like the post and you're in. And right now we have over 1,500 entrants and counting. I don't know how many pools that works out to be. I mean, you do the math. It's 30 people per pool. So that's what we're up to so far. We still have a ways to go to get to 2,200. I don't know if we'll quite get to that record again this year. But hey, 1,500 people, that's a lot of people. We still have a few weeks left to go. Plenty of time to head on over to the Facebook group and get in on the fun. There'll be prizes. We'll have an Ultimate Rumble pool winner in the end. You get bragging rights, all that fun stuff. So check that out. Also, if you missed it, basically did kind of like a bonus sound off this week. I was on again with Wade Keller of the Pro Wrestling Torch on his Podcast One show. We were talking SmackDown Live. This is my fourth spot co-hosting with Wade since August. This is my first one of the new year. Fun as always, and again, the more you guys support and tune in, the more I'm sure I'll be invited back. So if you missed the show, you can go back and check that out on Podcast One. So Wrestle Kingdom 12. I did a full review, I said I would, and the very next day after I watched the show that evening, I got my full review up, almost 40 minutes long. It's up on the YouTube channel. I gotta tell you, I was pretty stunned that the video did 40,000 views in its first 24, not even 24 hours. And now it's up over 55,000. So thank you to everybody who watched it. But those are like WWE pay-per-view review numbers, usually. I mean, some of the bigger shows do a lot more than that. But I don't know, I didn't expect it for a New Japan show. I guess I underestimated the interest. I knew there was a lot of interest going into the show. You never know what to expect when you review something other than WWE. And easily the strongest numbers for any kind of non-WWE review like that that I've done, at least on the YouTube channel. I'm sure Jericho had a lot to do with that, obviously, the interest in his match going into the show. But again, you can find the full review up on the YouTube channel. Speaking of 40,000, that's how many people were in the Tokyo Dome for Wrestle Kingdom. You include comp tickets, I think the exact number was around 43,000. The paid attendance that they announced, though, was 34,995. So close to 35,000. Like, if that were WWE, they would just announce 50, because why not? But they announced 34,995 people, only 5 off paid attendance, only 5 off from 35,000. So that's pretty impressive. The biggest Tokyo Dome crowd, I believe they said, in 15 years. I like the show a lot. I got an email from Angelo from Toronto, one of the listeners of the podcast. He wrote me before Wrestle Kingdom telling me that he was going to be there at the Dome, and he would send some live notes after the show was over. Two of the more interesting ones, I thought, I wanted to share really quickly here. You can pretty much bring in your own snacks, your own food and drink into the building, okay, which you obviously can't do with a lot of buildings here in this country. And they have servers there selling beer from a beer dispensing backpack, which sounds amazing. Where can I get me one of those? That's what I want to know. I thought the main event delivered, whichever match you consider to be the main event, either one, they both delivered. Okada Naito was the real main event. I know some of you might say Jericho and Omega, but both matches were great, especially Jericho and Omega. That was my match of the night, and I think a very early candidate for match of the year. Those two tore down the dome. I mean, literally, they tore that place up in the first, like, 10 minutes of the match. It was the best Chris Jericho match in years. Meanwhile, Kenny Omega, he continues to add to his resume, his already very impressive resume in New Japan. I thought Okada retaining over Naito surprised me a lot. Begs the question, you know, would they do a rematch? And if they are, it's on hold for a while, based on what happened at their New Year Dash show on Friday night at Corken Hall. It was Naito, Bushi, Hiromu Takahashi, Sonata, and Evil. They beat Chaos in the main event, which is the team of Okada, Will Ospreay, Hirooki Goto, Yoshihashi, and Gedo. Naito was the last one left in the ring after the match. He was celebrating his victory when all of a sudden Chris Jericho came out of the crowd and attacked Naito. They had a giant pull-apart brawl with Jericho being dragged off. So obviously this one-off with Kenny Omega isn't a one-off after all. This all stems from comments that were made about a month before Wrestle Kingdom. There was a back and forth, I think, on Twitter, or some of Naito's comments were translated. I think I saw them on Twitter, but then Jericho would drop little, you know, he would drop little tweets that were clearly kind of poking at Naito, because Naito took exception to Jericho and Omega both calling their match part of the double main event. You know, Naito felt slighted by that. He said, "You're not the main event. We are the main event. Okada and I are the main event. If you want to call yourselves part of the semi, like a double semi-main event, along with the Jay White Tanahashi match, because that match is also for one of the secondary titles in New Japan, then that's fine. You can call yourselves part of the double semi-main event." And then Jericho mocked Naito over us. Anyway, that's, I think, the story they're telling here as far as why Jericho would attack him, why there's an issue between them. It kind of stems from those comments. There was actually a lot that happened on that New Year Dash show on Friday. We had Bad Luck Fale and the Gorillas of Destiny. They won back their never open weight six-man tag team titles from Ishii, Yano, and Trent Beretta. Only 24 hours or so after losing them. So I'm not really sure what the point of that was, why they did the title change at Wrestle Kingdom, if they were just going to put the belts right back on these guys. Sometimes you just do a title change, I guess, for the sake of doing a title change. We had Bullet Club. They had Kota Ibushi dead to rights after their match. They have this guy, they're holding him. Cody has a chair. He's about to bash his brains in with this steel chair. All of a sudden, Kenny Omega slides into the ring like a bat out of hell. He rips the chair out of Cody's hands. He saves his old partner, Ibushi. Obviously, those two have a history together. And Omega and Cody, they start going at it. They're getting into a shoving match. They're shouting at each other. This is creating even more friction within the ranks of Bullet Club. This is not the first time we've seen these two guys go face-to-face like this. So after everything cools down, Cody leaves, the other Bullet Club members leave. Omega's alone in the ring. And he says, "You know what? We have to stay unified. And how do we do that? I know. Let's announce a new member." And so he ends up bringing out Switchblade, Jay White, who lost to Tanahashi at the Tokyo Dome. Jay White comes out. He even donned a Bullet Club shirt. This is like the old NWO days where you would give the guy the shirt. He would tease it. He would put the shirt on. Only obviously this is on a much smaller level than those peak NWO days. But he puts the shirt on, and then he swerves Kenny Omega. He drops him with his Blade Runner finish. He tells him, "I'm coming for that U.S. title." And later on, to add insult to injury, Jay White was introduced by Okada at a press conference as the newest member of the Chaos faction. So he spurned Bullet Club in favor of Chaos, and he did so, he said, as a way to help take down Bullet Club. That's his only mission here. He joined Chaos, he's aligned with them because he wants to take down the Bullet Club, but he warned Okada, "Don't get too comfy, because at any moment, I could come after you and your IWGP Championship." They also set up Minoru Suzuki as the next challenger for Tanahashi's Intercontinental title. He attacked Tanahashi's injured leg on the New Year Dash show. It may have been an Indian deathlock, I think. I watched it. I think it was an Indian deathlock that he put him in. And Sonata, who just became one half of the IWGP Tag Team Champions the night before, he is next in line for a shot at Okada and the IWGP title. He choked out Okada after the main event was over with. He used his skull-end submission to put him out. Okada has since said that he would accept Sonata's challenge, but only if he and Evil first give him being Okada, and Hirooki Goto a shot at their IWGP tag team titles. And provided that happens, he'll be more than happy to give Sonata a championship match. It's all about the titles in New Japan. That's the sense I get from all this. I mean, I still think there's one too many of them, but I like how big of a deal they all are. You know, it's like the titles are the most important thing, as it should be. So they already have a lot of their key stories settled going forward into the new year, which brings me to my crystal ball for 2018. A lot of you were wondering if I was going to do another prediction show. I did the top 10 WWE matches last week and a look back at 2017. I promise you that we would do predictions again here this week on the first show of 2018. Before I do that, I like to go back in the Wayback Machine and take a look at most of my predictions for 2017. Because it's easy to make predictions and stuff and then you never mention them again, and or you only focus on the ones you got right. Yeah, sports writers in the newspapers. Like, if you like reading the sports pages, they prognosticate, they talk about stuff all the time, like I do here on this show. But I don't mind, you know, looking back and even picking out the things I got wrong, sometimes really, really wrong on. It's just fun to go back and go through them. So, these were from Sound Off episode 476 last year. These are most of them. I know that there's a few I'm missing that I was off on. These are not all of the predictions. These are kind of the key ones that I pulled together, ones I got right, ones I got wrong. These are the main ones, but there are others I got wrong, some of the kind of lesser predictions. I said that John Cena would tie Ric Flair's record of 16 world titles, his WWE record of 16 world titles, and that no, he would not go heel. So I was right on that one. I said that Hulk Hogan would make his return to WWE at WrestleMania 33, 30 years after one of the most famous matches in the history of wrestling against Andre the Giant. That did not happen. That surprised me a lot, because I thought that was probably, if they were going to bring him back, that would have been the prime place to do it. Here we are now almost a year later, and still no Hogan. I'm sure a lot of you were happy about that. I just thought if they were going to bring him back, that would have been the most appropriate place for it, and that did not happen. I said that Kurt Angle would return to WWE, but it would first be on the cover of WWE 2K18, so I was half right. He did come back, but Seth Rollins was on the cover of 2K18, not Kurt Angle. I said that AJ Styles would become the biggest babyface on SmackDown. There it is. Braun Strowman, I said, would become a babyface and would have a match with Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, which technically he did. I was not wrong on that. I was only off by a month on the singles match. I said that Finn Balor would return from his injury and go heel and form the Balor Club with Anderson and Gallows. And given what we saw on Raw this week, hey, you know, I was wrong on this, but again, better late than never. He's not a heel, not yet anyway. But at least they had enough sense to finally put the three of them together. I said that Bayley would win her first championship on the main roster, which she did. But I also said that Summer Rae would have a breakout year. And technically, I was not wrong. She did break out. She broke out of the company. So, depending on how you look at that, I wasn't completely wrong. I said that Samoa Joe would debut in the Royal Rumble match and be part of the Raw brand. I was literally off by only a day. I said that Shinsuke Nakamura would debut on the SmackDown brand, which he did, but I also predicted that even though I would save it for next year's, well, this year's WrestleMania, that he and AJ Styles would have their first match before the year was out. They did not have a singles match, but you could technically say they did wrestle because they were both part of that Money in the Bank match. They even did a whole sequence together, so again, if you're picking nits here, you could say that technically I was right, but not really. Speaking of Money in the Bank, last January on that episode 476, I said that Baron Corbin was my pick to be Mr. Money in the Bank, and I was right, but I also thought that when he cashed in, he would win the WWE title, which, boy, boy was I wrong about that. I predicted that Adam Cole would leave Ring of Honor to become a top star on the NXT brand, and he has, really. I mean, he won War Games, so that counts. I also thought NXT would go live every week from Full Sail by the middle of the year. That did not happen. I predicted that we would not be getting our first Women's Royal Rumble match this past year, but we would get our first Women's Money in the Bank match, so I was dead on about that. I thought the New Day would go their separate ways this year, with Xavier Woods going for the Cruiserweight title to that division, and Big E would get a big push, either for the IC or the US title, and so that was wrong. I predicted WrestleMania 34 would come to US Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, which was getting a lot of talk at the time, the home of the Minnesota Vikings. It's a brand new stadium that just opened up last year. I was happy to be wrong about this one, because instead I get to go back to New Orleans this year, so I'm very happy to be wrong about that. I predicted that there would be more fucked up stories about Impact Wrestling, but that the company would survive another year. This was probably the least shocking prediction of all. That's been the story, really, of TNA's entire existence. Lots of messed up stories, but somehow, like a cockroach, they find a way to survive another year. I thought Vader would lose 100 pounds doing DDP yoga, and that he and Diamond Dallas Page would both be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. I was half right. DDP did get inducted. Vader, not so much. And lastly, I predicted that Jimmy Snuka would be declared incompetent to stand trial in the death of his former mistress, and that's exactly what happened. He did not stand trial. But karma works in mysterious ways, and about a week or so later, he died. So he would not have made it to trial anyway. So those were mostly my predictions for 2017. I know I'm leaving a few out, but those were kind of the key predictions I made. Not too bad. I don't think that was too terrible. There were some good ones in there. Which leads me to 2018, the year ahead in wrestling, not just WWE, but wrestling in general. What can we expect when you look into the crystal ball? What does the ball tell you? Well, the ball tells me that Shinsuke Nakamura will win the men's Royal Rumble match this year. Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part, not so much a prediction, but I really do want him and AJ Styles at WrestleMania. You know, if there's one guy I think on that main roster right now in WWE who needs to have that one classic WWE match and has yet to do so, if you don't count the his debut match in NXT against Sami Zayn, which was awesome, that person is Shinsuke Nakamura. I think that, you know, as far as how they've pushed him and everything, I don't know that you can quibble too much with WWE about it, because they could have done a lot of bad things with this guy. I mean, seriously, they could have gone a million different ways with him. And by and large, they've protected him. Not so much with the Jinder Mahal stuff. And I think the Jinder Mahal stuff did a lot of damage, and it wasn't all on Jinder, even though Jinder never had really a very good match. But Nakamura also, he was very underwhelming in that feud. He did nothing to get me excited about seeing him in there with Jinder Mahal. I mean, maybe there's only so much you can do. But even outside of the Jinder matches, can you really think of one WWE pay-per-view match or TV match? He's had some good ones. I'm not saying he just has bad matches. But, yeah, like, for example, I enjoyed the match he had with John Cena. I don't think anybody would look at that as any sort of a classic that people are going to remember 5 or 10 years from now. But, you know, whatever. It was good. But, you know, think back in your memory bank here. Has he really truly had any memorable matches since he came to the main roster? I say no. And I think he's overdue for one. He came in with a lot of fanfare. He still hasn't had that one great match. I think he and AJ could have that match at WrestleMania, and I hope they have that opportunity. Ronda Rousey, I predict, will win the Women's Royal Rumble match, last eliminating Stephanie McMahon. And she will go on to challenge Asuka for the Raw Women's title, the Battle of the Armbars, at WrestleMania, after Asuka beats Alexa Bliss for the championship at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. I just, you know, if Rousey is coming in, and I know the whole thing with her movie schedule, oh, you know, she won't be able to be at the Rumble, I still think that she'll end up as a surprise in there. And if she's in there, I think she'll win. But I just can't see them putting Rousey on SmackDown. That's why I think if she's going to work against anybody, you know, could it be Charlotte? Yeah, it could be, and that would be a big match. But I see her working or appearing primarily on Raw when she does make appearances, because Raw, it's still their flagship. It's still their baby. No matter how much they try to say, you know, both brands are equal. No, they're not. You know, Raw is still their, you know, if you had two children, you don't want to say, oh, well, I have a favorite child. They do. Their favorite child is Raw. So I think if Rousey was going to be on either show, it would be Monday Night Raw. I also think that we're going to see both Trish Stratus and Lita as entrants in that Women's Royal Rumble match, and they may not be surprises. I think one or both of them will be on that Raw 25th anniversary show the week before the Rumble. I think it would be very smart of WWE to promote at least a couple of old names for the match. You know, you got 30 slots, which I'm not happy about that, and I'll talk about that later, but you've got 30 slots in this Women's Rumble match. You're going to have lots of room for surprises, right? Molly, Holly, and people like that who I figure will probably be in there. I think it would be kind of dumb not to tell people that, hey, Lita's going to be in the Rumble, or hey, Trish, or better yet, Lita and Trish are going to be in the Rumble, right? You can give a little bit without saving, you know, 10 or 15 different names as surprises. I think you want to let people know, hey, you should watch this show because guess who's going to be in this Rumble match? I predict that Roman Reigns will beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania to win the Universal Championship. And, of course, grass is green and the sky is blue, I know. But this will end the final title run that Brock Lesnar will ever have in WWE. I'm not prepared to say that this will be Brock's final year, that he's going to walk when his contract is up. I think there's far too much money on the table for this guy. When you see these stories on Forbes and such about, you know, WWE salaries revealed, always take that with a grain of salt. I don't know how accurate that is, but I saw the list that came out a few weeks ago, and I think it said something to the effect that Brock Lesnar, and I don't know if this is just like base salary or if this includes merch and everything, but he made something like $12 million last year. I can believe it. Absolutely, I can believe it. You think that Brock Lesnar is going to walk away from $10 or $12 million a year? For what? For working how many matches? Are you kidding me? Like, even if he wants to go back to UFC, and that's a whole process, because remember, he's under suspension. And he, as far as I know, he hasn't taken any steps to remedy that or serve his time. So that tells me he's probably not fighting. And he, you know, I can't see him just saying, hey, you know what, this wrestling thing was good, but I think I'm done. Believe me, you're not leaving $12 million on the table. That's just not happening. So I'm not convinced that he's done, but I'm also not convinced that we're ever going to see him with a championship again. Because, you know, whenever this reign ends, what's the point? You know, he's had these two long runs with the championship now. I don't really see there being a point to him holding a title and being an absentee champion any more in the future. I think that would be a bad idea. Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan has been the subject of a lot of speculation in recent weeks, including right here on the show. I predict that Daniel Bryan will wrestle again this year, and he will wrestle again for WWE. The way I look at it, you know, at least under their watch, they can try to make sure that this guy doesn't kill himself. It's probably safer for him, honestly, to wrestle for WWE than go somewhere else and wrestle. But I predict he will wrestle, and either he wrestles Shane McMahon in a singles match at WrestleMania, or he teams up with Shane. Neither one of them go heel in the end. They end up being partners in a tag team match at Mania against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I say of the two, the tag team match would seem more likely. This stuff with Shane and Owens, I mean, this goes back to the summertime. It's almost hard for me to believe that maybe they've been, you know, actively, knowingly pushing this long-term storyline. Like back in July or August, they knew, you know, like the end game would be something at WrestleMania. I don't know if that's true or not. But this has been building for a very, very long time. And so I think here we are now in the thick of WrestleMania season almost. And you could do Shane versus Bryan, let's say if Bryan is able to come back, but it's almost a slap in the face to Owens and Zayn because now they're left without any logical program unless they just, their alliance falls apart and they just have a singles match on the show. I think they should be in a higher profile match on the card and it would make sense for them to do something with Bryan and Shane. So I think the tag match of those two is probably the more likely scenario. Kurt Angle will wrestle Triple H at WrestleMania, and will lose. I predict that Randy Orton will go heel again. You gotta know this guy is just itching to go heel again. So I predict he will go heel again, but it'll be on Monday Night Raw. Goldberg, I predict, will headline the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2018. I also predict that Eric Bischoff will join him in the Hall of Fame this year. Psycho Sid will get the call too, but he will no-show the ceremony and blame it on Donald Trump's travel ban. I predict that Kane will win the election, become mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, which leads to him retiring from WWE in 2018. It might not be this, you know, formal announcement. He might just sort of slink off into the darkness and go do his job. I don't know that there's going to be all this pomp and circumstance for it, but you know, if he wins the election, which I don't know where he is in the polls and all that. I really haven't even looked. But if he wins, and I predict he will, then it stands to reason he would want to focus all of his efforts on the job and not be getting dressed up and playing Halloween on TV every week. So I think that that would spell the end. Certainly it will spell the end of Kane as a headliner. I think this little main event run he's on now, it's like a token run for this guy. Part of it is also just trying to feed someone to Braun Strowman to help get him that much more over, I guess. But I think more than anything, this little main event run he's on is sort of a thank you, and I think it will be his last. I'm not sure exactly how they're working the Money in the Bank matches this year, since it's now a co-branded event. It is officially one of the Big Five now. The way they do it, it would have to be the most logical way to me, four men from Raw, four men from SmackDown, so you have a co-branded match, and you do the same thing with the women. Four women from Raw, four women from SmackDown. That's assuming you want to have eight. Maybe they want to have six, maybe they want to have 10. That's up to them. I think eight is perfectly fine. But if that's the case, if that's how they work it, my pick for the 2018 Money in the Bank winner on the men's side is The Miz, who then immediately decides to cash in on the WWE champion, not the Universal champion, and he wins the title and he goes back to SmackDown. And this is against the wishes of Daniel Bryan, who's still the SmackDown, GM, even though he could be wrestling but still be the GM, even though that does sort of create a conflict of interest. But it's not like we haven't seen Kurt Angle wrestle and he's still the GM. So this is against the wishes of Daniel Bryan, who, you know, his hands are tied. You know, The Miz cashed in. He's the champion of his brand now. And eventually, it builds to Bryan challenging Miz for the WWE Championship and beating him for it. Although I would hold off on that until WrestleMania the following year. I think Miz has done enough. And I think you could still go back to the issue which was left unresolved with Bryan. There's a lot of heat there. I mean, they really created a compelling little feud between those, you know, for a feud that never got physical. They created, I thought, as compelling a feud as you possibly could between two people. You could always go back to that, and I would want them to milk that as long as they can. So I think Bryan is the babyface GM who feels helpless. Miz as his champion, almost like holding that title hostage in a way. I think Miz deserves a somewhat lengthy run with it, and it gives you time to really continue to build the tensions between the two of them until finally Bryan says, look, if nobody else can beat you for this thing, I'll step up and do it myself. And we finally get the big payoff with Bryan and Miz and Bryan winning the belt. Maybe it's all just, you know, pie-in-the-sky fantasy booking in my head, but boy, I think that story would make a lot of sense, and I think Miz is going to win Money in the Bank this year. Now remember, I picked Baron Corbin last year, so I've got some success anyway picking these Money in the Bank winners. And I did think about, you know, Jason Jordan and Elias. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different names who could potentially win Money in the Bank, but I'm banking on Miz. As far as the women's Money in the Bank ladder match, my pick, I'm going to go with Peyton Royce. I think Peyton Royce, by that point, her and Billy Kay both will be up on the main roster, hopefully together still as sort of a unit. But I think Peyton is going to win the briefcase. Because, like, in my head, I'm picturing how much longer can the two of them be in NXT for? I feel like they should already be on the main roster. That's number one. Number two, I can easily see one of them, and of the two would be Peyton, winning that briefcase. And then the both of them, when they come out on TV every week, are sort of parading the briefcase around. When one of them is wrestling, the other one's in their corner with the briefcase. Like, I can picture this all in my head. So I'm going with Peyton Royce. I predict that Jeff Hardy will finally get that Hell in a Cell match that in interviews for years now he's been saying he wants. Like, people ask him, what's left for you to do in WWE? And multiple times I've heard Jeff Hardy go, you know, I've never had a Hell in a Cell match. I really want a Hell in a Cell match. Well, I think Jeff finally gets his Hell in a Cell match this year. And I predict it will be against Samoa Joe. Rusev will have a breakout year as a babyface. Some say he already is. But I think he'll have a breakout year finally as a babyface. He won't win the WWE title. He won't win the Universal title. But I do think we'll see him holding singles gold of some kind. Big Cass will return from his ACL injury still as a heel, and he will reunite with Enzo Amore, not as a tag team so much, but with Enzo as more of his mouthpiece, which I think is the direction they should have gone in before Cass got hurt. I predict that Ethan Carter III will leave Impact Wrestling and return to WWE as a member of the Raw roster. I predict that Cody Rhodes will headline the All-In Independent show that he and the Young Bucks are putting together, and he will do so, the big main event, against Kenny Omega, after months and months of building to a Bullet Club split in New Japan. Tensions this year will boil over, and it will result in Omega and Rhodes in the main event of this big independent show. Chris Jericho and Tetsuya Naito will have their match in New Japan at the Dominion show, I predict. Their Dominion show is in June. I noticed Jericho is on tour with Fozzy, I think starting at the very end of this month, in fact. He's on tour right on through the end of April. I don't really see an opening for him to do WrestleMania or a New Japan match. And so because of that, I think it'll be at least May or June before we see Jericho and Naito. But I'm gonna predict it'll be at that Dominion show in June and that Naito will win. And finally, Okada, I predict, will continue his record-setting reign as IWGP champion right on through 2018 and will finally drop the championship to Kenny Omega in their fourth and deciding match in the main event of next year's Wrestle Kingdom. That'll be Wrestle Kingdom 13 at the Tokyo Dome. So there you go. Those are my predictions for 2018. And we'll see, I guess, a year from now, we'll be able to look back, and if I got two of them right, I'll be very happy. I did better than that this past year, so hopefully I can at least, like, bat 500. That's my hope with these. But by all means, you know, go on Twitter, Facebook, email me, let me know what you think of these predictions. It's always fun just to think ahead in fantasy book and think, you know, who might be in the spotlight, who might be called up, who might be, you know, jumping ship from one place to another. It's always, you know, fun to think about these things. Monday Night Raw. Let's talk about Raw from this past week. Live from Miami, Florida. Twitter poll, over 2,000 votes. 46% thumbs up, 54% thumbs down. So unfortunately, the first Raw of the new year starts with a thumbs down ratio under 50%, which is not good. The last time Raw was live on New Year's Day from Miami, Kevin Federline pinned John Cena, who was not on the show this week. He was on the show last week. So I guess he just sort of floats around like a ghost, which is appropriate since you can't see him. What we did get was Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe. They had an excellent 25-minute match for the Intercontinental Championship. Before this, Renee Young was backstage. She's interviewing Joe. She's very nervous. And who wouldn't be if you were being interviewed by Samoa Joe, who is shouting at you? And Joe gets off this line of the year so far. He tells her that, you know, I made Dean Ambrose a stay-at-home husband, living off his wife's paycheck. Renee didn't seem to like that very much. It's funny, like, if there's anybody else in WWE right now on the microphone better than Samoa Joe, I would love to know who that person is. You know, like you say, maybe Paul Heyman. We know how great Paul Heyman can be. I will admit, I have grown tired of a lot of Heyman's shtick recently. He still knocks one out of the park every now and then, but there's only so much I think you can say when you've been doing the same segment and the same promo for so long, right? Joe just brings an intensity and a fire like nobody else on that roster. And if there's any justice in this wrestling world, he'll have gold around his waist by WrestleMania. So the stipulation of this match was that if Roman Reigns was disqualified, he would lose his Intercontinental Championship. There was at least one time during this match where the referee did tease that he might DQ Roman, and everybody got all up, like everybody was, they were into this match. But he didn't do it. He did not disqualify. I kept shouting, do it! I was like, do it, do it, go ahead, do it! But he never did. Reigns won with the spear. This match, good as it was, wasn't even the match of the week because it had the misfortune of falling in the same week as Wrestle Kingdom, but this was as good a Raw match, I think, as you will see. I'm very sad that they seem to have blown this off so soon. I guess Joe could still get the belt. Maybe on that 25th anniversary show, which is where I had pitched them doing the rematch, I would have saved it for that show and did the title change there. But it's looking, you know, look, maybe they will keep that championship on Roman until WrestleMania and do the whole champion versus champion thing. I think it's unnecessary. I wouldn't do that. But the closer we get and the more people he mows down, I get a little more worried about that. I still feel like Joe is the guy to get that belt on. And then you could do Joe and Balor or just have him work with somebody else. It's just a situation where he doesn't need it. You know, Roman, he's had some good matches as the champion against Joe and Cesaro and even, you know, I think Jason Jordan. But he doesn't need it. He doesn't need it. I mean, is anybody who is not already going to be watching WrestleMania suddenly going to be interested in the show and buy the show because it's champion against champ? Do you really think Brock Lesnar is going to be the Intercontinental Champion? Do you think he even gives a shit? He wipes his ass with that thing. So, yeah, champion versus champion could be cool. Hogan Warrior, that was cool, right? If they do Omega and Okada, possibly champion versus champion, that's pretty cool. I don't know. Roman and Brock, though, champion versus champion. Maybe it's just, I don't know, maybe it's Brock, just knowing that Brock just doesn't give a shit. I can't even, like, fathom the idea of him winning the Intercontinental title. It's just so unrealistic to me that, I don't know, I think it's completely unnecessary. Kurt Angle, he announced that the Women's Royal Rumble match will indeed have 30 women in it. I do not like this idea. I think it's too many. I think that there's going to be a ton of filler. Like, a little bit of filler in the Rumble is to be expected, but they're going to have a lot of filler in this match. I don't know why they don't just do 20. You do 20 women at 90-second intervals. That would be the perfect number, the perfect length. And either way, they have to open the show with this match. You cannot do two Rumble matches back-to-back. You just can't. So the Women's Royal Rumble match, 20, 30 deep, however many people, this has to open the show. We had Asuka. She tapped out the Raw Women's Champion, Alexa Bliss, with the cross arm breaker. The announcers teased that Asuka could be next in line for a title shot. Which begs the question, then why is she in the Royal Rumble match? She just beat the champion. Shouldn't she be getting the shot at Bliss at the Royal Rumble? Why does she have to suddenly be 29 other women now? They finally decided to put Finn Balor together with Anderson and Gallows. They're all smiling baby faces, at least this week they were. Balor needed two partners to take on Elias and the Miztourage, so he chose his old buddies. They won, and then they posed and they did the too sweet gesture. Good. Good. Finally. I'm not gonna bitch about them taking this long to do it. They did it. That's what matters. Now, hopefully, they can keep these three together until they viciously attack Roman Reigns the night after WrestleMania to set up his first title program with Finn Balor, who never did lose that Universal Championship. That's the place that I would do it. I would pull the trigger and do that angle on that show. Enzo Amore, he was out with the flu this week, so they postponed the Cruiserweight title match that was scheduled with him and Cedric Alexander. He was in the hospital. But supposedly Enzo left the hospital, he came to the building, or was going to come to the building, he was ready to perform, and according to PW Insider, WWE officials sent him back to his hotel and they would not let him wrestle. Good on Enzo for trying to suck it up and show up to work, but what the hell is wrong with you? Like, are you mad? You'll get half the roster sick with the flu. Like, if I was another worker, if I was the person who was supposed to work with him that night, I would be pissed as all hell if this guy showed up with the flu, half dead. This is a company that just had a mumps outbreak. The last thing they need is a flu outbreak. Speaking of Enzo, the first night of those planned 205 live house shows, which had been scheduled for Friday, January 19th, in Rhode Island, was canceled this week due to what WWE claims were routing and scheduling issues, basically logistical issues. The dreaded logistical issues excuse. Remember a couple years back when TNA canceled their entire hardcore Halloween tour that they had planned? They, too, claim that it was because of logistical issues. They were full of shit, but that's what they claimed publicly. I remember I had somebody who worked for Ticketmaster who wrote into me and said they weren't selling any tickets to this thing. I'm like, no shit, they weren't selling any tickets. But again, that's what they claim publicly. So color me skeptical. Color me skeptical of this excuse. The other two shows are still on. That's Saturday and Sunday, January 20th and 21st. They still have shows. Both shows, by the way, are due to be headlined by Woken Matt Hardy against Bray Wyatt. Two shining stars of the cruiserweight division in WWE. Braun Strowman killed Rhino and Heath Slater on this show. He beat Rhino with the running power slam, then he laid waste to Heath Slater. And then after the match, the fans kept chanting one more time, so he gave each guy not one, but two more power slams. Fans were rabid for this segment. And by the way, I also saw that Braun Strowman apparently was out sick recently with the flu. Supposedly he was violently ill, so just imagine somebody like Braun Strowman being violently ill with the flu and try to enjoy your lunch. But I guess he's okay now, but the fans were rabid for this. This was as crazy as I have seen the fans for Strowman in a very long time. So whatever momentum that may have, you know, slowed a little bit after he lost to Brock, and it never really killed his momentum, but I thought it slowed it. Well, he's got it all back because people were going nuts for him. And I look at this reaction and I think to myself, the time is right. Like, if they were going to pull the trigger and put the championship on this guy after they didn't do it in September, it feels like the right time. Not in terms of being so close to WrestleMania. That actually feels like, at this point, you know, they're so close to anointing the Chosen One that why would they do it now? But in terms of Braun and just the support that he seems to have, and no obvious logical match for him at WrestleMania at this point, aside from Triple H, and I hope to God they don't do that match, it just feels for him like the right time. But again, there's no way they take that title off Lesnar this close to WrestleMania. I mean, to have this long title run end in a three-way match, it's not happening. Which leads me to the final segment here on this show. What a pile of dog shit this was. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar come out for the obligatory Brock bounces around while Heyman shills promo, which works most of the time. I am still, for the most part, a fan of when they come out and do this because I just like the pairing. But it did not work this time. I thought this was boring, I thought this was dull, and that was before Kane came out. Kane does come out. Lesnar charges at him, Kane gives him a chokeslam, lays him out. He goes to leave, all of a sudden Lesnar does the zombie sit-up, he turns to Kane, he starts laughing at him. Like he did to The Undertaker in their SummerSlam match a few years ago. And when he heard Vince was looking to restart the XFL, so that kind of laugh. Brock clotheslines him out of the ring with the belt, takes a header outside of the ring himself. They both go tumbling over. All of a sudden, the entire mid-card spills out. You got Goldust out there. You got, you know, Curt Hawkins is out there. And I think Apollo Crews, I saw him maybe, and Titus out there. And in the mix with all these mid-card guys is Finn Balor. And I thought to myself, well, that's not a good sign for him that they would send him out there with the rest of the undercard. But then I thought to myself, I guess he does kind of fit in. These days to that crew. Sad as it is to say, I guess he does fit in with that group. But this was lame. This was lame when I watched it on Tuesday. It's even more lame now watching this after the pull apart that like Jericho and Naito had on Friday. That's how you do a pull apart. So this was lame and this was stupid and I thought this ending sucked. But my other issue with this, I should have queued up the clip because this is perfect for my Kevin Dunn, what the hell was that segment. What the hell was with those camera cuts at the end of the show? This segment was unwatchable. Those last 60 seconds or so. I mean, it's like, I know why they do it. It's a technique that they use. They think it adds to the chaos of what we're watching. They did it with all those Shield beatdowns all the time. They perfected it with the Shield. One of the things I hated. Maybe the only thing I hated about all those Shield segments, the camera up and down, left and right, like the person had epilepsy. They were giving people epilepsy. But this was as bad as I've ever seen it. Go back and watch it. literally, like, you could visualize, whether it's Dunn or whoever Dunn is directing in the truck, sitting there and getting direction and saying, okay, yeah, let's say six cameras, right? And so the two cameras that we're going to use, it's camera three and camera six. Okay, we're on camera three. They start brawling. Go to camera six. Three, six, three, six, three, one, three, six, one. Like, enough? What are you doing? Do they actually think this makes for good television? You can't produce your way into a good segment. No amount of camera cuts can make this segment good. Like, well, you know, if we really just go back and forth between the different camera angles, it'll make the segment feel a lot more, like, you know, urgent and a lot more, like, fun and exciting than it really is. No. No. If you take a turd, you're walking down the street, you're walking your dog, right? Your dog stops on the side, and your dog takes a dump. You look down on the ground. What do you see? You see a pile of shit. Well, that was this segment. This would be the equivalent of somebody reaching down and sticking a birthday candle in it. Looks nice. Almost looks like a birthday cake. But it's not. It's still a pile of shit. Like I said, you cannot produce your way into a good segment, no matter how much you try to dress it up, no matter what amount of special effects, like your fucking Michael Bay over here. That's not how this works. This ending sucked. And it did nothing to get me interested in seeing these two in the ring together, I'll tell you that. I mean, I wasn't excited for Lesnar and Kane to begin with, but now I'm even less excited. This is going to have to come down to Strowman and Lesnar, and hopefully they'll have a better match than they did back in September. But my hope is they take Kane out of this thing early on. They put him through like five tables or something and bury him in the rubble. Do whatever you have to do. Get him out of the picture. He can do his, you know, rise from the dead later at like the last 2 minutes of the match and then take the losing fall. But yeah, not looking forward to this match. SmackDown Live from Orlando. Twitter poll, over 1,500 of you voted, 66% thumbs up, 34% thumbs down. So according to you, SmackDown wins the week over Raw. Shout out to Joey Cummins for getting his I'm a Sound Off Guy sign front and center on TV this week. Not a bad way to start off the new year, so thanks to Joey. Top of the show had AJ Styles wondering if Daniel Bryan would allow Kevin Owens to be in Sami Zayn's corner for his match against him in the main event. They want you to think that Daniel Bryan is in cahoots with these two men. Bryan came out, but before he could answer, Shane came out, interrupted him, and he started talking. I think he referred to it as a kinship that Bryan, in his opinion, in his view, has with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. He said if Bryan was going to let Owens be at ringside, which Bryan never even had a chance to say whether or not he would allow that, Shane said, well, then I'm going to be at ringside. And Bryan said, okay, well, I also will be at ringside for the main event. So they really seem to want you to think that between Shane and Bryan, if any of them turn out to be the bad guy here, the bad seed, it's going to be Bryan. But I think it's all a swerve, and I've seen, like, there was, like, a note this week, I don't know if it was from the Observer or where it was from, but saying that, you know, WWE is going to turn or could possibly turn Bryan heel because they want to somehow decrease his value before he leaves and goes to work wherever he's going to work if he does leave WWE later this year when his contract is up. Look, I wouldn't put it past them to want to do something like that, but I don't buy that. I just don't see that. I the whole Bryan turning heel thing is just, I don't know, it's too far out there. He's been a heel before. It's not like he's never been a heel in his career. He's not like Ricky Steamboat, but I don't see it. I don't see it. I see this as more of a swerve. I think it's way more likely of the two, if anybody is going heel here, that it would be Shane, who would hardly be the first McMahon to go heel on TV. Shane's been a heel before as well, although not for a very long time. But I think with Shane, it could work. I mean, the bloom is sort of off the rose. When he first came back, people cheered him like crazy. He still gets cheered, but, you know, he's been back now for a while. I think if they wanted to turn him into the evil, you know, commissioner on SmackDown, then they could certainly go in that direction. But I do think it's way more likely of the two it would be Shane. I also think it's just as likely neither one of them goes heel, and they end up teaming at WrestleMania to take on Owens and Zayn. But Bryan becoming a heel GM, I don't see it. I don't see it. It reminds me too much of what they did with Lex Luger and Tatanka back in 94. Doing everything they can to make you think that Luger took Ted DiBiase's money. DiBiase's got Luger in his back pocket. Tatanka was on television every week and just, you know, pleading his case and saying, see, and there'd be like suspect footage that gets released of Luger sort of going into his locker room and Tatanka's like, see, I was right. And this went on for a while. I mean, that, I guess that would make, of course, in the end, it was Tatanka, by the way, who turned and went with DiBiase. But that, I guess, would make Shane the Tatanka in this equation. It would make Brian the Lex Luger, which may be the only time anybody has ever compared Daniel Bryan to Lex Luger. The first and last time, I promise. The Usos retained their tag team titles over Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin, but not before we got a dusty finish with Gable and Benjamin winning the titles with their finish, only it turned out that none of the men in the ring were legal at the time. This was brought to the referee's attention. He recognized his mistake. He restarted the match. And I am all for the referees correcting their mistakes, but I wish that they would be consistent with this. I hate how WWE thinks that we're all a bunch of morons, and they just make up the rules just to suit their own agenda and to suit their own stories as they go along. There's no consistency here. Remember that one pay-per-view match a few years ago with Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio, where they had referee Mike Chioda go to a monitor? They had a flat panel. I think they pulled it out from under the ring, and he's outside the ring. He's watching on a monitor the instant replay of what had just happened. I don't even remember what happened, but he's watching the instant replay of what happened. Cool, right? That's different. That's unique. If you're a fan of instant replay, okay, that's pretty cool. Apparently not, though, because they never used it again. They never did that again after that. So, like, 1 minute, the referee's decision is final, and then the next, they're changing their minds and restarting matches. Whichever way the wind blows, that's pretty much the WWE philosophy. So the Usos ended up pinning Gable to retain. I didn't think the match was anything special. I mean, the time they were in there was okay, but it was, I think, between the two matches, between the two falls, the whole thing went, like, 5 or 6 minutes, which, you know, is hardly enough time to say, hey, that was a great match, or hey, that was a bad match. It was just, you know, it was an average match. Xavier Woods pinned Aiden English after the springboard elbow drop to advance to the semifinals of the U.S. title tournament. He will meet Jinder Mahal in the semis. It's going to be Jinder and Bobby Roode in the finals. I mean, this seems pretty obvious to me. Only question is who goes over. I'm going with Jinder after either Dolph Ziggler or Baron Corbin getting involved and costing Bobby Roode the match. On the podcast that I did with Wade Keller earlier this week, we talked about the women and that backstage segment where Dasha Bot interviewed Natty, Carmella, Lana, and Tamina, all lined up shoulder to shoulder, like they were in like a firing squad. They're all lined up shoulder to shoulder for their promo on the Riot Squad. So I guess they were technically cutting a promo on some squad. But I hate how forced these segments feel. Nothing about this feels the slightest bit genuine to me. Like, I'll give Paige a lot of credit. I know not everybody may be a Paige fan, but the one thing I will say for Paige is that when she's out there cutting a promo, she has a style that at least is different than most of the other women on the roster. She is maybe the closest thing that they have to, like, an AJ Lee type who could go out there, and let's say they wanted her to drop another one of those bombs, like AJ did on the Total Divas cast all those years ago, right? She went out there and just roasted all of those women. I look at the rosters now, and I don't know that I see anybody except maybe Paige as having the potential to be able to go out there and do that kind of promo. So I give her a lot of credit, but I look at these women here on this show, and there ain't none of that. With Natty and Carmella, there isn't just a shred of that to be found. And Ruby Riott, you know, I will say this, and it's funny because when the Riott Squad first debuted, like the way they debuted and everything, people were comparing Paige to Ruby, like, oh, they even look alike. So maybe there is something to that, because I will say that Ruby Riott maybe has that potential. We haven't really seen that yet. She's still very new to the main roster. But maybe besides Paige, out of all the women, Ruby might be the one. She at least, when she was cutting a promo here on this show, when they were out in the ring, after the match was over, because the Riott Squad beat them. So the match is over and Ruby's in the ring cutting a promo. She at least does sound like a real human being, like flesh and blood and bone and not some kind of android. She tried the best. Yeah, she did the best with the material they gave her. Charlotte came out. She brought out Naomi, who got a nice reaction in her hometown. And then out came the returning Becky Lynch, who got a nice ovation. They all ran down. They attacked Ruby and her crew. I thought this was good, at least. Nice to see Becky back after filming her movie. So that's really the best thing I could say about this. I think the SmackDown Women stuff just, it does not appeal to me at all right now. They showed Karl Malone, the mailman, at ringside. He threw up the diamond cutter sign. See, now there's somebody who I think would be a fine choice for a celebrity induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. A genuine, real-life wrestling fan. Like, when he came into WCW to do the match back in 98, it's funny, I remember was it the NBA Finals? It probably was the NBA Finals, when they had the little dust-up between Malone and Rodman, and I think they tripped over each other, maybe in mid-court during one of the NBA games, and the announcers, it might have been, Bob Costas made the comment about how, oh, you know, like, they're lowering themselves to doing professional wrestling, and, you know, because Bob Costas, he's got a stick shoved so far up his ass, it's coming out his nostrils. But I remember when they were talking about Malone being a wrestling fan, they were saying that when he would be on the road playing, you know, he would make sure, maybe his mother or somebody, he would make sure that he had somebody back home taping the matches, taping the WCW shows that he would miss, so that when he was off the road and he came back home, he could watch them. So, like, that's a real wrestling fan there. So he must have grown up watching that, you know, NWA, WCW period, I'm guessing. But just a genuine fan who came in, they brought him in, he was a hell of an athlete. He certainly looked the part. I mean, you go back and watch Karl Malone, the guy's a giant. I mean, he's towering over everybody. He had to be every bit of 6'8". Like, they used to build Hogan. They used to bill him as being 6'8". Hogan was no 6'8". Hogan was a big dude. But I doubt very seriously Hogan was ever more than, like, 6'6". You know? But Malone was just this giant of a man. Great athlete. He came in. He did the match in WCW. It was him and DDP against Malone, or rather against I think it was Hogan and Rodman. The match itself, I don't remember the match itself being anything really special, but he didn't embarrass himself. You know, he looked pretty decent in there, and it got WCW a lot of publicity. You know, basically the complete opposite of what happened with David Arquette. At least they didn't put a title on Malone, but he certainly didn't embarrass himself out there. I would be fine if they wanted to put him in the Hall of Fame one day. I would have no problem with that. AJ Styles against Sami Zayn was the main event. I think that this was their first singles match That's wrong. They did have at least one match on Raw, so this would probably be their second match on WWE TV. I still love it when Zayn hits the Blue Thunderbomb. He had a beautiful one here. AJ just sold it like perfection. He did like six revolutions before he fell and hit the mat. He never wins with it. He never wins with the move, but I still love it when he hits it. Zayn ducked the phenomenal forearm, led to a ref bump. Ref got shoved outside the ring, so of course, AJ then rolls up Sammy, but there's no referee because Owens has the ref distracted on the outside. When he finally did come back in, AJ only got a two count. Now, Shane McMahon sees this, and he obviously is no fan of Kevin Owens. He sees Owens is involving himself here in this match. He shoves Kevin Owens to the ground. He put his hands on an employee. Owens didn't touch him. Shane had no right to do that. So he asked the referee then, after shoving this man on the ground, he tells the referee, I want you to toss out Kevin Owens, which he did. And then Daniel Bryan said, well, you know what, Shane? If you're going to eject him from ringside, then I think you should go too. And you know what? He's 100% right. How anybody can view Daniel Bryan as the heel in this situation, I'll never know. It was the right call. So Owens then jumps up on the apron to distract Styles. This led to Zayn hitting the, I guess you could call it, a distraction haluva kick. He nails AJ with it, and he gets the win. So that now gives Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn each a win apiece over the WWE champion. Styles was not happy about this. He grabbed the microphone. He told Bryan to make everybody happy, why don't you just make it a handicap match with, you know, him against Owens and Zayn. And Bryan thought that this was a hell of an idea. So not really sure if AJ meant that literally, but Bryan took it that way. He made the match for the Royal Rumble. It will be AJ Styles defending the WWE Championship against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in what is being billed as a handicap match. Even though we know that it may start out as a handicap match, but I guarantee you it will not end as a handicap match, because when you put those two in the ring together, they may be all buddy-buddy, but with the title on the line, believe me, you're going to get the spots where Sammy goes for a pin and Owens pulls him off, or vice versa. You watch. So, again, they want you to think that Brian is in cahoots with the two of them. I really don't think that's where this is headed. I think this ends up being more a case of Brian just trying to be a good GM and trying to book the biggest matches possible. Call him naive. He's a naive babyface. I don't think it's some nefarious plot that's going to be uncovered where he's trying to screw AJ Styles out of the championship. Although if it was, and it somehow led to Brian against AJ, you wouldn't hear a single complaint from me. But that's not what this is. I mean, the direction for WrestleMania, again, it's either Shane against Brian, or Brian and Shane against Owens and Zayn. That's just how I see it. I could be completely wrong. This could be, like, you know, Dr. Maroon could listen to the show and just shake his head. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I see it. Like I said earlier, it wouldn't be impossible to turn the fans against Brian. It's never impossible. You could always find a way. You know, he can go out there and kick a baby into the crowd or something, but it would be pretty damn hard to do, I think, to get the people to turn on this guy, and I'm not even sure why you would want to. There's no NXT review this week because it was a year-in-review show. The only thing of note that they really showed, they finally aired that NXT Championship match from November in San Antonio, where Shawn Michaels was the guest referee for Drew McIntyre against Adam Cole. They did air that match, so that match did end up airing on the network, only on a month and a half delay, and the match was fun. You know, they did, you know, Michaels took a bump, and Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish got involved, and Kyle O'Reilly ended up eating a super kick, and it was fun. You know, it was a fun little match for what it was, but there was really nothing else of any great substance, and so everything, now that the new year is upon us, everything will sort of get back to normal this week. So with that, let's just get right into your questions, because I have a whole bunch of them here. For the mailbag, you can email me always at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. When you write in, we'll start with Glenn from Chicago. I have this theory about the Undertaker character. If you go back and watch him after his match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33, watch closely as he takes his hat off and you can see him take a deep breath and exhale. It was like an exhale of a weight being lifted off his shoulders. I truly believe the spirit of the Undertaker was released that night. Now the Undertaker comes back as promoted on Raw 25 and comes out as Mark Calloway. He cuts a promo saying thank you to the fans and that he is officially announcing his retirement. Excuse me. Vince McMahon interrupts him and announces that this year the Undertaker will be inducted into the Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts about this idea? Yeah, it's funny, I noticed that too, that sort of deep exhale that he took after he took his hat off at WrestleMania, and I took that to mean, finally, it's over, I'm done, I'm finished. That's what I took that to mean. Him cutting a promo as himself, I think, would actually be really cool. Yeah, he'd get a standing ovation probably that would go on longer than the one Hogan got that one time on SmackDown in Montreal. Vince then coming out to announce him for the Hall of Fame would be the perfect way to make the announcement. And it's interesting, too, because it's actually right around that time, usually just before or just after the Rumble every single year, that they announce the headline attraction for that year's Hall of Fame right when tickets go on sale. So it's possible. I don't think that that's such a far-fetched idea. I really don't. The way I see it, it can only be one of two things. It's either something along the lines of what you just pitched, you know, him announcing his retirement and just making it official, probably setting up a Hall of Fame induction, or they're setting up his WrestleMania. I still think it's way more likely that he's there to set up a WrestleMania match, probably against John Cena. I'm not a fan of this idea, but I think that's the most likely scenario. But, you know, the thought of them, again, they're broadcasting from two different locations. And supposedly Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler are doing the commentary from the Manhattan Center portion of the show, which I think is really cool. But I would, you know, I wouldn't have the Undertaker come out at the Manhattan Center in front of, you know, 1,500 people. I would have him come out that night at the Barclays Center for the other portion of the show in front of the big crowd and pretty much do something along the lines of what you just suggested. You know, so the deep exhale was the end of the Undertaker character, but now he actually gets a chance to come out one last time here and talk like a normal friggin' human being and, you know, get the recognition that he deserves for a career that he's had. I mean, it's a career that we're not going to see again, I don't think, in this company. Not for a very, very long time anyway. Just in terms of all the matches and the longevity of it and the constant recreating of of the character and evolving the character. I mean, it's a hell of a career. And I get that he's a private guy, and this sort of goes against what we know, you know, The Undertaker to be about. But if he's done, there's no reason for him not to, you know, come out of his shell a little bit and just come out and talk to us. And then go into the Hall of Fame. Mark from Sydney, Australia. Say the unthinkable happens, and Roman Reigns gets injured with WrestleMania right around the corner. How would you change the main event match with Brock Lesnar, and who would win? Because Lesnar has beaten everybody with the exception of Finn Balor. You gotta get Strowman in there. Especially if it's like an emergency situation. You gotta really think quick. What do you do? Roman's hurt. You gotta put Strowman in there. Strowman is the most over guy they have on the roster right now. I was talking about this earlier when I did the Raw review. Whatever momentum he may have lost a little bit of in the last few months coming out of that match with Brock, he's got all of it back and then some. I mean, the reaction this guy got on TV on Monday, you would think he is the top star in this company. People were going nuts for him. They just want to see him wreck shit. He's like this, you know, human wrecking. I used to call Zeus the human wrecking machine. Well, that's what Strowman is now, and people love it. They eat it up. So I think you got to find a way. If Roman gets hurt, you got to find a way to get him in there. He wins the Elimination Chamber, let's say. And then he goes on to beat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. Maybe make it a no-holds-barred match this time. I thought their No Mercy match was a stinker, so maybe the added stipulation would help make for a better match. And then you go with Braun and see how far you can go with it. Sucks for Roman. I'm sure he'll get a cushy spot once he's back and healthy again. But for Braun, you know, strap the rocket to him and see how far it'll take him. Dylan from Trinidad and Tobago. I'm a fan of Bray Wyatt, but I'm with you when you say he had a terrible 2017. In my opinion, it all started when Randy Orton won the Royal Rumble and they went on to have that horrible match at WrestleMania. Do you think Bray's 2017 would have been different if he and Orton had swapped roles? If Bray had won the Royal Rumble match and Orton had won the Chamber? It makes for a more compelling story, and it would have been a better payoff if Bray had his big WWE title win at WrestleMania. Well, I would hate to change anything about that Elimination Chamber match last year because I love that match. I think I put that match at like number 5, I think, right? Number 5 or 6 in my top 10 countdown for the year. And a lot of that had to do with those final few minutes when Bray eliminated Cena and people realized, holy shit, it came down to Bray, who they seemed to like, and AJ, who they liked, even though both were heels. They were getting cheered like the two biggest baby faces in the world. And that last, you know, little sequence between them was a lot of fun. So I would hate to, like, not do that and pretend that never happened. But I agree with you. I think it would have been better if only because, you know, I would have liked to have seen him get more than 1 month with the championship. Right? What do you have? Like, 6 weeks, maybe? Tops? 5-6 weeks as the champion? And also, think about this. If Bray Wyatt is the champion coming out of WrestleMania, we probably do not get Jinder Mahal as a WWE champion. So for that reason alone, it would have been a much better idea to have Bray win the belt at Mania and not take it off him so quickly. Right, Bray wins the Rumble. The Chamber instead comes down, let's say, to AJ and Orton. Orton wins. You'd have to do some kind of angle on TV leading up to WrestleMania where Bray, you know, because Orton was a part of the Wyatt family at the time, don't forget. So you'd have to do some kind of an angle on TV in the lead up to Mania where Bray wants Orton to surrender the title to him or something to that effect. But that's where Orton does the turn. He leaves the Wyatt family, he turns on them, and then Bray beats him for the championship at WrestleMania. I don't know that it would have made the match better. So let me be clear about this, because I thought that match sucked, okay? And it sounds like you did too. The match wasn't shit because Randy Orton won. I want to just make this very clear. I know there's a lot of people who will say, oh, the match sucked, Orton won, it should have been Bray. This has nothing to do with the finish of this match, okay? The match wasn't shit because Orton won. It was shit because it was a shitty match. The bad finish only made a shitty match worse. It's very possible that those two were going to have a boring match no matter what. But for Bray, he would have been better off if the roles were reversed, absolutely. But it all comes down to the booking. At the end of the day, how successful a champion he is comes down to the booking. He can have this big grand old win at WrestleMania, but if he gets booked like a friggin' loser, he'll have a Rey Mysterio title reign or a Daniel Bryan title reign, and that's not going to do any good for anybody. So at the end of the day, I can't predict, you can't predict, we will never know long term how things would have worked out for Bray Wyatt. Brian from Orlando. How do you feel about Sting's WWE run now in hindsight? Do you feel he was used correctly, for example, losing at WrestleMania and not winning the championship against Seth Rollins? I think it was disappointing how he was used. Obviously, it was disappointing he got hurt. He got forced into retirement when he wasn't ready to retire. That sucked. But he never should have been wrestling Triple H or WrestleMania. It should have been him and The Undertaker. That's the match that most people wanted to see, even in their own poll that they did on their website at the time. I know there were some people who just thought it was going to be an absolutely horrible match and they just could not understand the hype and they did not want to see Sting and The Undertaker. I don't want you to think that 100% of everybody wanted to see that match, but most people wanted to see that match. That was a must-see match for a lot of people. That's just the fact. And you finally get Sting under contract. You've got The Undertaker, who is coming back, as it turns out. Even after he lost to Brock, there was some question of whether or not that was going to be it for him, but he ends up coming back anyway. You've got both guys under the same umbrella, working for the same company, and you don't do the match. They had a very short window to make that match happen, and they didn't do it. Instead, they gave Undertaker an easy win over Bray Wyatt. You know, it wasn't a year where he had this giant match to promote either. It's like, well, we can't deviate from the plan because this is going to be a huge... It's like Undertaker against Triple H or Undertaker against Cena. We can't change that for Sting. They didn't have a big match planned for The Undertaker. Maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't know until 2 months before, but so what? If you think there's a chance Undertaker might come back, you hold off. And if he is, you make the match that people want to see. What's so hard about this? Like if you're a promoter, what promoter in their right mind would not try to put together a match that they think people would want to see? It's like Dana White in UFC. You could say a lot of shit about Dana White, you know, but Dana White's not going to go out there and say, well, you know, the fans really want to see, this guy against this guy, and you know, I think we're going to go in a different direction. Like, you know, if he thinks it's a match where that's going to make him a shitload of money, then he'll put the fight together. Because as a promoter, that's what you should want to do. Sting was gone. He was out of this company. People didn't even think he would ever be in WWE. Finally, he comes in, and they don't do the match. They absolutely should have done Undertaker and all the smoke and mirrors, the weapons and such, you know, to give them the added handicap. They could use all the toys. Maybe the hype for it would have been much better than the match itself. I don't doubt that. Everything up until the bell probably would have been better than the match itself. But you never know. Look at Sting and Hogan. Sting and Hogan in TNA. Somebody asked me a question about their Bound for Glory match last week in 2011, I think, or whatever it was. Those two guys, Hogan was broken down as shit, okay? Sting could still kind of go at that point. Hogan was just a broken down shell of what he used to be. But you know what? Those two guys went out there. They were, you know, going on their star power. True. They were going on their reputations maybe more than anything else. But they went out there and they put on what I thought overall was a very entertaining match. And a lot of it was the post-match, but, you know, they weren't going to go out there and have a five-star classic. But they're two big names that have a lot of history together. People seem to want to see that match. They built up to it. They did it. They did the whole Hogan turn where he went babyface again. People cheered like it was Hogan from 85 out there. And people seem to enjoy themselves. Never underestimate the ability of two old guys who feel they have something to prove going out there and putting on a good show. So yeah, maybe it would have sucked, maybe not. Maybe they would have surprised a lot of people. Sting, for years, wouldn't shut up about this match. To this day, when he does interviews, he still says, I want to face The Undertaker at WrestleMania. It's like now, at this point, he comes off like the crazy old guy. You know, like, it's not happening, brother. Like, it's over. Give up the ghost already. But that's the match he always wanted. I'm sure he would have been extra motivated to go out there and put on the best possible show he could. I think that match probably would have surprised a lot of people. And the build-up would have been amazing. People would have ate that shit up. Are you kidding me? The first face-to-face on Raw between them would have been huge. The first choke slam, or the first Scorpion death drop, or maybe you don't even have them touch. Maybe they just go face-to-face, they never touch. As far as who wins in that scenario, Undertaker does. That's the only answer. Sting's so... If you were bothered by the fact that Sting lost his one and only WrestleMania match, then this won't make you much happier, because in this scenario, I think he still loses. And that would have pissed off a lot of people, but that would have been the right outcome. him losing to Triple H, I'm still not sure how that's the right outcome, other than, you know, Sting wanted to lose because he thought it could be his final match. All the more reason to do the Undertaker match. Now, as far as the stuff with Seth Rollins goes, you know, it would have been nice to have him win the championship, kind of just to say that he held it once, drop it back to Rollins. There was a big house show, I think, at Madison Square Garden the following month, and you could drop it to him there. You could drop the belt back to Rollins at Madison Square Garden, which I think would have been Sting's first time, I believe, wrestling in the Garden, so that would have been kind of a big deal also. If you would have gone into that show as the champion defending, and you do a big world title change on a house show, that's also not a bad idea. It's not some random house show either, it's the Garden. That was always their home base, but to do a title change like that on a house show, to me, when you do them every now and then, is never a bad thing. Because it just shows people, hey, you buy a ticket, you never know what might happen. But I think it would have been cool just to be able to say that Sting was a WWE champion one time. But, you know, he got hurt. I don't think the plan was for him to win anyway. So him getting hurt, I don't think changed anything, honestly. Except maybe the way they did the finish that night, maybe it was a different move. But I would have given it to him. And it doesn't take anything away from Seth Rollins, because Rollins, I think, had already wrestled John Cena. If I'm remembering correctly, Rollins was a double champion at the time. And I think he had already defended the U.S. title earlier, not even just earlier in the show, right before Sting came out. I think they did the matches back to back. So, you know, he beats Cena. Actually, did he beat Cena? I don't know if he beat Cena or not. I think he might have lost. But he just had an exhausting match with John Cena. So if he goes out there and loses to Sting, he's a heel. He could just come out the next night and bitch about how unfair it is. I already wrestled once. How is this fair? And then you set up the rematch at the Garden. So, anyway, but looking back at Sting's career, I can only judge it on those two things. He had the one WrestleMania match. They brought him back to challenge Rollins for the title. He didn't do anything else. He had a match on Raw with Big Show. How many people even remember that? Like, he didn't do anything else. So I can only judge it on those two things. I like that he was in a position to wrestle Rollins for the championship. Not a bad way to go out if that's how your career has to end, wrestling for the WWE title. I thought they did right by Sting in that situation, but aside from that, I think his run overall was just very underwhelming. Sebastian from White Plains, New York. I'm 16. I've been listening to your podcast for about a year and a half now. Wrestling has been getting really boring lately. I only watch WWE. Well, there's your problem. And have only watched the pay-per-views and takeovers the last 2 years because Raw and SmackDown are shit. But even the pay-per-views are not interesting to me anymore. I'm wondering if it's normal for most teen wrestling fans to feel as if they have outgrown the product. If I take a break for a year, is it possible I will have a renewed interest in the product, or have I simply outgrown it? Well, look, when I was growing up, a lot of my friends were wrestling fans, all right, WWF fans, and you were always in one of two camps. I always like to think that everybody's a wrestling fan, but then one of two things happens. You either outgrow it, which most people do, or you just get more into it, and you just keep going. That was me. I was the only one who kept watching and got more into it and more into it. I started doing my own wrestling magazine back in 1996. I would put the whole thing together every single month in Print Shop Deluxe, page by page, and I would have crossword puzzles. I'd write articles and trivia. Like, I just was all in. And I think it was more normal for people to just grow out of it. So if you feel like you've outgrown it, you're perfectly normal, because I think most people do. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think part of the problem also is you're only watching WWE. So here would be my suggestion to you before you do anything. And not just because I don't want you to stop listening to this podcast either, but my suggestion would be try watching another program. I'm curious if you're a WWE fan or if you're really like a wrestling fan. Some people can't watch anything other than WWE. That's what they grew up on, or they like the theatrics of it. Everything else looks like amateur hour, and they just can't watch TNA or New Japan or Ring of Honor or anything else. And I get that. But try watching something else. Try watching a Ring of Honor show. Try watching a New Japan show. Find a few matches on YouTube or something and just watch them and see if you like them. And that's how you'll figure out, are you just a WWE fan, or are you a professional wrestling fan? If you're a wrestling fan, there's a ton of great wrestling right now. There really is. There's a lot of great wrestling. Lucha Underground's going to be back soon. If you're into like the really over-the-top superhero comic book type shit, you know, you might enjoy Lucha Underground. You may never want to watch another WWE show again after you watch that. That's coming back, I think, in the summertime. It's going to be a while. But you can watch all the old seasons. I think they're up right. They might be on, are they on Netflix or they're on iTunes? I know that. So do that before you do anything. If you just absolutely can't get into it, you don't like it, it's not for you. I think this is probably the worst time to just completely drop WWE cold. Like any other time of year, I would not blame you in the least. But now we're heading into the Royal Rumble. We're heading into WrestleMania. Like, I don't know how Rumble and Mania are going to be. I'm optimistic. Hopefully they'll be fun. But maybe they turn out to not be so. Maybe they're the shit. Maybe they screw up the Rumble again and WrestleMania is no good. I don't know. But the one period all year that you would expect WWE to be on their A game and be exciting is right now. I don't know why you would stop now. I would stick with it now. If you're not happy with the way things are with the Rumble and WrestleMania, then yeah, give it a break. Give it a break for 6 months. Come back at that point and see if you missed it. That would be my suggestion. But it's just sort of an odd time, though, right? If you've stuck with it this long and now you would stop when they're heading into their, like, what's supposed to be their most exciting period all year. I would, you know, hold off on that. See how things go. And then if you're still not happy, then just take a break. That would be my suggestion. But definitely check out some of the other wrestling that's out there because, you know, you might find that you like it. It's not just WWE. You might actually find you like something else. Chris from Pensacola, Florida. With everyone always talking about the Attitude Era being the greatest era of wrestling, what would be the second greatest era in professional wrestling in your opinion? Not everyone says that the Attitude Era was the best. Just for the record, I'm just saying. I would say the late 80s period. I don't know, what would you call that? The Golden Era? The Golden Days? Right? I think the Golden Era, that's what people call it. At least in terms of WWF. I would say the late 80s. If you were a WWF fan, the late 80s were awesome. It was you got Hogan and Savage and Warrior and DiBiase and Jake the Snake and Demolition and Mr. Perfect and the Hart Foundation. You had Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan every week. No heel authority figures. It was great. It was great. And if you grew up an NWA fan, that was also the golden age. Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen, Flair and Dusty, Flair and Steamboat, the Road Warriors, the rise of Sting. I mean, come on, you can't beat that period. Jerry from Long Island, buy or sell on Chris Jericho versus Kenny Omega from Wrestle Kingdom 12, or Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 19. I think it would have been better to ask me this question in 6 months. Or a year from now when there's some distance. Like, I just saw Wrestle Kingdom, so I may be a little biased. But even so, I'm going to buy on Jericho Michaels. I think their best match was actually not their WrestleMania match. I think their best match was the ladder match that they had at No Mercy in 08 for the World Heavyweight title. I think that whole stretch of 6 or 8 months that they feuded is one of the all-time great feuds, one of the all-time great programs in that company for a championship. But their WrestleMania match was the best match on what was a pretty stacked WrestleMania card. It had a great story. Chris Jericho, he admitted, I idolized you. I wanted to be you. I dressed up like you. You know, just talking about how he idolized Shawn Michaels growing up as a kid. And it was everything he wanted to be in a professional wrestler. And now he had to go out there and prove that he was better than Shawn Michaels. That was the basic story. Plus, it was Shawn's first WrestleMania match back since the match with Austin in 98. First Mania match in 5 years. Post-match, I love how after he beat Jericho, you know, he's almost like crying and he hugs Shawn and then he just kicks him in the balls. He just kicks him right in the crotch and Shawn sort of slides down and Jericho gives him, like, he pie faces him down to the ground and flips off everybody. Like he was flipping off everybody at the Tokyo Dome. Like Jericho healed it up great with Omega, but he also healed it up great there in that match with Michaels. I think it was Jericho's first real, true classic match in WWE or you know, at WrestleMania. Because he had other great matches with Benoit and you know, him and Benoit against Austin and Triple H on Raw. Like, he had some classic matches before then. Even the last man standing match he had once with Triple H. But as far as WrestleMania goes, I think that was Jericho's first real Mania classic, was the match with Shawn in 2003. Now, I really like the Omega match, too. I thought it was great, it was a lot of fun, but I can't put it over the Michaels match. But the match with Omega was easily Jericho's best match in years. And finally here, Marcus has a buy or sell. Edge, when he was coming into his own as the Rated R Superstar, or Randy Orton, when he was coming into his own as the Viper. So I just want to make the distinction here. The Viper is different than Legend Killer Orton. I like Legend Killer Orton, but he's talking about the Viper here in this case. So I have to buy on Edge. I just thought Edge was, for the most part, Edge has always been, I thought, far more entertaining than Orton was. Especially when Edge was, he had SmackDown all to himself, Edge and Lita, and they were healing it up. Edge was great. Edge was very entertaining, and Orton is really good when he wants to be really good. He's had some, you know, great matches and such. But Orton is not really a, I don't know, maybe the word dynamic is a good word. He's not this dynamic personality who lights up a room when he's out there. You know what I mean? Like, Orton is Orton. I don't know how any other way to put it. You either like him or you don't. He's not a terribly exciting guy to watch. He's not a terribly exciting promo. In fact, I think he's kind of dull. I was far more entertained when you compare the two careers by Edge than I was with Orton. And I'm counting Edge even, I know he's asking like the Rated R Superstar. And I still buy on Edge. Again, that's the period I'm referring to. But even if you go back earlier in their careers, as great as the Legend Killer stuff was, like when Edge was doing comedy stuff with Edge and Christian, I loved that. That was great. So Edge could do comedy, but he could also be a real dick as a heel. And, you know, one of the great things is when he was feuding with Cena and he was, you know, smacking around Cena's father, you know, like stuff like that. So I was always far more entertained by Edge than I was Orton. So I got to buy on Edge. All right, if you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send all of those questions and suggestions. And you can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is where you can find me on there. Don't forget the Wrestle Kingdom review, all 38-plus minutes of it is up on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster. Please, if you have not already done so, hit the subscribe button. I have, you know, a good number of subscribers, well over 30,000 at this point, but it's so weird when I see most of my videos doing 50, 60, 100,000 views and it's like 30,000 subs. So, if you haven't already done so, hit that sub button. So that way, when new content goes up, you'll be alerted. Hopefully it'll hit your sub boxes and you can, watch it from there. And also, if you watch the Wrestle Kingdom video, I always neglect to mention this. I know I got to do this more often, but hit that thumbs up button. So if you like what you hear, give that video a thumbs up. It would be so kind of you to do so. Use our Audible trial. Somebody pointed out to me that new Fire and Fury book that's been the talk of the town, you know, the last week or so, that new Michael Wolff book. It is up on Audible in audiobook form. You can cash in on that book if you're into that and politics and everything. You want to listen to the book. The audiobook is up. And so you can use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster, and get that book for free. Right now, remember, it does not have to be a wrestling book. It could be any book that's available about anything, pretty much, that is up on Audible. So if you want that Fire and Fury book, use our link. Cash in. And you can get that right now. Don't forget, we also have our shirts up on prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. All 32, I believe, different designs are up, 32 and counting. And certainly, if you guys have any suggestions for t-shirt designs you might like to see, try to keep them more original. If possible, I'm all ears. You can always tweet me or email me and let me know, and we'll see if we can make that happen. But if you want to buy a shirt, that is the place to go. PayPal, you know where to go, thesolomonster.com, right-hand side of the page. Get yourself a shout-out here on the show. I will be back next Sunday for a brand-new episode, number 530. 530 episodes of this podcast. As we get closer to Raw 25, NXT TakeOver, and Royal Rumble. I got my fingers crossed. They don't drop the ball with this. This could be a lot of fun. This could be an exciting period, but only if they allow it to be. I'll see you guys back here next Sunday for more Sound Off. So until then, be well, stay safe. Hopefully wherever you are, it's a lot less cold than it is here in New York. Because right now here in New York, it sucks. Until next time, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
And there was one moron who tagged me in a tweet. He says, Smarks like everything from Japan. This guy has a picture of The Rock as his avatar, and he's quoting wrestling catchphrases on his timeline, calling other people Marks and Smarks when you've got another man as your profile picture, and you're quoting Psycho Sid. Sit the fuck down with that nonsense. You don't get to sit at the adult table when you spew nonsense like that. Go stand in the corner and face the wall.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.